Rashida Jones is a multi-talented human being. Not only has she been a writer, but she's also currently starring in On the Rocks, Sofia Coppola's movie about a woman's relationship to her Playboy father, played by Bill Murray. Rashida has also made a documentary about her father, Quincy Jones, that's one of the best documentaries I've seen about a parent and also a maverick. This is Rashida Jones. One, two, three, four, five. Questions with Len. Questions with Len. The first thing is a person in your life who has had meaning, resonance, importance, someone who's meant a lot to you and in some way or another shaped who you are. Who would that person be?
You know, that's a really hard question. I'm sure I'm not the first person to say that. I feel lucky because I do, in my journeys in life, I've met a lot of incredible people and been supported by a lot of incredible people. But, and I'm sure this is an answer here too, but I think the fact that people resonate with me all stems from my parents. My dad and my mom. I don't know if I can do a dual one, but
you can
my
do dad, whatever you want. You okay, can do okay. Dual. We're flexible.
My dad is such a, he's so proficient at connecting with people. He's such a true and pure and ideal extrovert in the sense that he gets everything he needs from people and they get everything they need from him. And I'm not quite like that, but watching that growing up and seeing how he makes every single interaction meaningful has really shaped my life and my relationships. And there's, you know, there's just nobody who even comes close to that in terms of, you know, how I manage my life and how I go through the world. And my mom, similarly, everybody that she met, everybody that she even had like a little interaction with, it was memorable for them and it was meaningful. Like she didn't know how to have dishonest interaction. And so I think like in a kind of umbrella way, having those two people lead by example to, you know, kind of show me how to behave in the world and how to make the most out of relationship has been everything for me.
Was it difficult to have two such powerful and well-known parents? Was it hard to find your place in that?
I mean, I think for anybody who has successful parents, there's going to be a little bit of that. But ultimately, it's not like they wielded power over people. It's not like they were corporate raiders. Is that even a thing anymore? you know, it's not like they were well-known for being powerful. They were well-known for being artists, for being yes. sensitive, you know, prolific, talented artists. And I think that has always been the centerpiece of how they live their lives and what they prioritize. And so, in that way, I think once I got over the hump of being a teenager and a young adult and thinking, God, how am I going to book an acting job and how am I going to pave some sort of path for myself that doesn't look like my parents did it for me, or it's a photocopy of what they did. You know, once I got over that, they were excellent resources for me, really.
Did you have trouble telling your parents that you wanted to go into acting and writing?
that's a funny way to put it. Yeah, I did have trouble because I really didn't want to do it. I was dead set on doing anything but that. And I wanted to go to law school. I thought about being a judge. I thought about going into
And you went to Harvard. I mean, you were like, you know, very good at school.
I was very good at school. I was a very good student. And I always dreamed of going to the East Coast. And I didn't even think about school on the West Coast. I wanted to like pursue this kind of, you know, Ivy League mm-hmm. fantasy. Very, very different from my like relaxed California, mm-hmm. you know, Hollywood upbringing. So yeah, it kind of pained me to tell them that I was going to end up back at home doing a similar thing that they did. But I mean, again, what are you going to say? They did it themselves. Like you can't fault your kid for making the same mistakes you do, especially if your mistakes turn out okay, you know?
Yes. Well, Sophia always tells me that her father used to tell her that you know, she should always be making something. Did you get any similar kind of advice? Because the one thing about your parents, especially, I know more about your father because everyone knows more about your father. He was just so entrepreneurial. I mean, it felt like he was constantly had his finger in like 3,000 pies at once in a great way, in a fantastic way.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't even think he's
and
a
still
good,
does, doesn't he? I mean,
it still does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not a good person to be a role model because he's singular in that sense. Like, I don't think anybody else could manage that level of creation and innovation and entrepreneurial spirit. Like, I just don't think, and don't try this at home is my advice. I try not to compare myself to him because he's just, again, he's an aberration, but
a one-off, but you're kind of a one-off too.
In some regards, yeah. But I also like, his advice is so good and his advice does apply to like the general population like myself, even though, you know, he's good at seeing what's good about other people, which makes him a good producer. So yeah, he always told me, be really good at two things. So you don't put all of your eggs in that one basket. And those two things can be interrelated. But, and he's also, you know, he's diehard about learning, stay curious, be humble. You can never learn enough. You don't know everything ever. And you can't believe the hype. Like, you can't let people tell you that you've stopped growing or like this is the version of you that they love.
I love the two things thing. I love the having two things. I love that. Is that why you started writing?
Yes, that and I was always passionate about it, but I feel like all the good directors and bosses that I know, they start notes with two things. And it's true. Like, I think our brains have the capacity to process two things and that's it. Even if there's four things, just make it two things. But writing was always one of the two things that I wanted to do. I wasn't quite sure about acting, but writing I wanted to do. I was scared of it. I didn't feel good enough for many, many years. But yeah, I mean, eventually I made something of it.
And then you got to play a lawyer in Social Network. So you sort of got to fulfill your dream of being a lawyer.
Fantasies come true. Yeah, completely.
And you got to end the movie, essentially. You have like the last great line.
I know. You know, it's so funny because when I went in to audition for that movie, you know, Aaron is obviously virtuosic in his rhythms and his dialogue. And he's very, very serious about it. And I changed a word, which was so dumb, in the audition because I couldn't make sense of like, it was like an infinitive. Yeah, it was an infinitive. It was like, you're just trying so hard to be. And he loved that. And of course, I ruined it because I added one to the end of the sentence because I say, you're not an asshole, Mark. You're just trying to be one. And he was like, you know, that thing that you just said that's not on the page. So then we had a bit of like a conversation about grammar and syntax and what would work for him and what would work for me. And we came to a really good compromise. And I think I added like trying to be, and it felt like a little better. And there we go. I didn't get fired. So that's good.
You got the part. More than didn't get fired. You got the part.
Yeah.
And you probably had to say it 92 times because it was David
Fincher.
I said
it many times, many times for David, yes.
So these are five things. I'm sorry, we have more than two. But the second thing is a place that has meaning for you. And again, it doesn't have to be a city. It can be a city, but it could be also, you know, a tree in your backyard, or it could be a train or something that is not necessarily a large place. It could be a room in your house.
You know, I mean, I think I'm not trying to be lazy, but I think I have to go with California because
I think you have to pick a city.
I have to pick a city. Oh, okay. Then I am being lazy. Okay. I have to pick a city.
Otherwise,
okay,
I think
LA.
We might be here till tomorrow. If we do all of California, we're going to be in trouble.
Okay. I have to pick the United States.
Okay.
Because here's the thing about the U.S. Okay.
Are we including Hawaii? Right. Let's just make sure we know what we're talking about.
Yes, we're including that. I think LA, because, you know, it is this, I have this really deep, complicated, you know, will they, won't they relationship with Los Angeles. And I also culturally, it's so embedded in my brain and in the way I speak and the way I think and the way I see the world. And it's just such an interesting city. Like, it's such a cool, weird city. Everything's here. Nothing's here. It tells you what it is. And then some days you're like, it has no culture. It's changed so much from when I was growing up. It was such a great place to grow up in the 70s, you know, like obviously the weather, the avocado trees, the artists, like all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, now it's this sort of like, I don't know, it's this weird, it's always like on the verge too, California. Like, if you live here, you're probably tracking earthquakes on some level somewhere. And anytime one happens, you're like, oh, that's right. Yep. Forgot. Mm-hmm. Yep. I live in that city. I live in this one. You know, and I've been here for some of the big ones. And
me too. I'm from LA, you know.
Oh, you are? You're from LA?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I went to Palisades High.
You went to Pali?
I went to Pali.
Wow. Okay, so you know this kind of like long, like tortured relationship with the city.
I love LA. I think it's an excellent choice. I think LA is magical. Magical.
It's magical. It's magical. It really is. And it's crazy that we built all of this infrastructure and this and all these dreams in a desert where we shouldn't be. But, you know, it is magic, and it's created so much magic and kind of continues to grow in weird ways. And
it's very exciting right now. I think LA is having a real moment.
It is. It is. And I think I would like to take this opportunity to thank New York for that, because they priced everybody out. All the artists got priced out, and they were like, should we move to Jersey? No, let's move to LA.
Exactly. You know? Let's move to a part of LA no one even knows yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
West Adams.
You know, Frogtown. Like, all these cool places. There's so much LA that you can keep discovering LA. I mean, there's places, I don't know about you, but I didn't even go to until I was 20 and didn't even know it was part of the city, you know?
Well, I was a terrible snob because I was a West Side girl. So I really thought going to the Valley was like the equivalent of going to, you know, Zanzibar or something. I now have all these friends that live in the Valley, and the Valley is very cool. But at the time, I was extremely like, oh, I don't even know the Valley.
I get it. I went to school in the Valley, so I have a deep affection.
Which school did you go to?
I went to Buckley.
Buckley is the most regimented school in LA.
Really? I think it's Harvard-Westlake, because Buckley goes through phases. Like, right before I started Buckley, it was like Bret Easton Ellis and his whole crew.
That's me. That's my generation.
Yes. So, like, I don't think, I mean, strict or not, like, things were going down at Buckley.
Yeah.
You know? So, I think it depends on the class and it depends on the administration. But yeah, it was certainly strict when I was there. I got in trouble for drinking a beer on a trip to France, and I got kicked out of all types of clubs. They were very strict.
Were you on the debate club? They had an incredible debate club.
I was in Model UN.
Of course.
Award-winning.
And what country did you represent?
I actually represented Kenya, and my little sister's name is Kenya, because at one of our conferences, people just started calling me Kenya, and I was like, that's kind of a cool name, and I suggested it to my dad and his girlfriend, and they named her Kenya.
Oh, that's excellent. So you really represented Kenya.
I did, yeah.
But have you lived in other cities besides Los Angeles? You lived in New York for a while, correct?
Yeah, I did. I moved to New York after school. I vowed to never come back to LA. I've lived in London. I was convinced I would be a New Yorker until the end. But, you know, LA has her mysterious powers lure you back, you know?
Also the weather. You can't beat it.
And also the weather. I know. And I had this moment where I left New York and I wondered what I was fighting for.
Yes.
With, you know, I mean, it is my relationship with New York is like having a very charming, very moody, like sometimes verbally abusive ex.
Sometimes. And I think you're being very generous, Rashida, like all the time. And I live here, so.
It's a thing. It makes you tough. But like, you know, waking up one morning and it's gorgeous and it's springtime and everybody's wearing skirts and nice to each other. And then the very next morning you wake up and it's like, wait, is this the same person?
Exactly.
It's raining and storming and everybody's yelling at each other and you can't get a cab.
It kicks you in the ass.
It does. It does. I'm glad I live there and I love New York forever. But I think, yeah, you can't beat the weather. And my family's here, you know?
The thing about LA is also at a certain hour, the light and the city smells good. It's just like has a beautiful scent.
It does. It really does. And the beach.
The beach, yes, and the mountains. Now you have to pick an inanimate object, something that's not actually alive.
You know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at one of many paintings that I have that my grandmother painted. And, you know, it's a thing that my mom started giving me her paintings as I, you know, had my own places. So I think when I first moved to New York, she said, "Do you want this little painting?" And then just continued to give me her paintings. And every time I was in awe of what a beautiful artist she is. But there's something, it's so visceral. I really do feel like, and I don't feel like this with everything. I don't think everything is animated and everything has a spirit, but her paintings really do. And I feel like she's here. And my grandmother died when I was 10 and she had such an elegance. She had red hair, green eyes, a real beauty. She grew up in Scotland and was really close with her sister and, you know, was just a real force in my young life. And I wish I'd gotten to know her better because she was also so different from my mom. And I only knew stories about her through my mom. So having her here in her very colorful, very impressionistic paintings is, I honestly get joy and inspiration daily from her paintings.
Are they self-portraits in any possible way?
No, I think there's one that I have that's three young people. And I think that the girl is my mom.
Uh-huh.
It's just like three young people on the beach. But no, there's one beautiful one of a woman that's in my front hallway. I don't think it's her. It's very kind of classical. And the one I'm looking at is very kind of impressionistic. And it looks like it's an extrapolation of a still life with blue flowers and a red backdrop. But it's kind of like wild. It's not like, I like that there must have been something in her because my grandparents were very like, they're beautifully dressed, really like fun, kind of life of the party. My grandfather was a lawyer. My grandmother's an artist. But I feel like there's sort of like a wild and almost like a shadowy wildness that I get from it that I like.
Do you paint?
I don't. My sister's a great painter. I don't have that visual medium. I wish I did. Not good at painting.
Have you been painted?
Ooh, I have been painted. I had this weird portrait done of me by this artist, Young Jake, who's like kind of a cool, like digital artist where he took emojis and did a kind of like Chuck Close portrait of me in like 12 minutes.
Wow. Did you pick the emojis or did he pick the emojis?
He picked the emojis.
Is it all one emoji or a zillion different emojis?
No, because it's like tonal. It's like, it really, really looks like me, but it's like donuts and poop emojis and clouds. And whatever. Like if you look very closely, you can see all that, but from a distance, it looks like me. It's big.
That's kind of great. Do you have that or is it like
hanging? I have that.
Is it hanging in someone's house somewhere?
It's in my house, not hanging because I don't think maybe when I'm 80, like I can't picture a world in which I have a giant portrait of myself in my house. I'm not there yet.
I think that's probably for the best.
I think so too. I think so for everybody.
What's your favorite emoji?
Ooh, it shifts. I use the the cry face emoji a lot, like the open mouth cry face, because I think it's funny to use it in the wrong way. Like, I like using it when something makes me happy.
Yes. Oh, I like that. I like that.
You know, there's also a little lady who's doing, like, she's in the middle of a cartwheel that I really like.
I don't know that one.
Very, very tiny, really hard to find. Like, every time I try to find it, I can't. But she's like a gymnast. And like, it's I like using it as like a celebration.
That's a good one. I like that one. I like the open mouthed crying one.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a classic. I like that it's a classic.
My new favorite is the face that's like, the mouth is like an S shape and like one of the eyes is half closed.
Yes, I like that one too.
Good one.
Yeah. I like the old school emojis.
Just like a smiley face?
Yeah,
like
I mean, like, you know, it just, you yellow see it, faces. It just makes you happy, you know? It's like a, you feel good about that text. Because the thing about texting is you can read a text and feel like, what happened here? You know, there's a little bit of a jar.
One text? You mean every text. Impossible to decipher tone.
I know. That's why I never like exclamation points except on texts. Because I feel like at least then you see the uplift.
Yes. Right. You're like, we're not in a fight.
Exactly.
Right now. I also think, I often think about how many people are at home reading a text and not laughing and then just going full bold, LOL, 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 like while they're like, you know, burping or like falling asleep, you know?
Or not paying attention at all.
We're not paying attention, yeah. Autofill.
What did you do it? How did you lose it? Was it true?
So the fourth question is something in your life that was at the time considered a failure or something that was a negative thing, like a relationship that broke up, but turned into a positive thing because you broke up with someone and then you met the love of your life, or you didn't get a part, so you were free to do another part. You know,
right.
Something that was seemed catastrophic at the time, but actually turned out to be a good thing.
God, doesn't it feel like life is made up of all of that? all of life is just that. The thing that comes to mind for me, maybe because it is truly front and center, is I have tinnitus. I have ear ringing.
No.
Yeah.
When did you, is this from going to a lot of concerts?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing, is it's so mysterious how it can come as a side effect of a medication. It can be nerve damage. The good news is I'm not losing my hearing at an alarming rate. I'm losing it a little bit, but that's, you know, what happens. But it's been 4 years now and it's not circumstantial. I have a ringing in my ear all day long, every single day. And I mean, it's truly, it can be considered an empirically nightmarish situation. And I'm not going to lie, there are times when I feel like I'm living in a nightmare, but it is this huge symbol of every single life challenge rolled up into one, just, you know, squarely presented in my life, which is you have a choice, constant choice, to reframe anything that happens to you. That's the only choice you have. I don't necessarily think I believe in free will. And this is like way outside of my control. I can't control it. I can manage it. I can get distracted, whatever. But every time I go to sleep, I have to deal with this. I never hear silence. So my management of that has to be aligned with my management style in my life. And I have to find things that are good about it, or else I'll lose my mind. I mean, that's why they say that's why Van Gogh cut his ear off. And I get it. I totally get it. I want to do that sometimes. I want to slam my face against the desk. But in the meantime, it's just a reminder that, you know, you are not in control. And the only thing you can control is your reaction to things. And I have to be very mindful about, you know, my relationship with this thing. And I have to create a narrative that is optimistic and pushes it in the background and push the things that are important to me into the foreground, or else it's it. I lose my mind and then you never hear from me again.
Did you just wake up one day and it was there?
Yeah, I did. And there's things that make it worse and there's things that make it better.
What makes it worse?
My favorite thing in the world, coffee. Stimulants make it worse. A lack of sleep makes it worse. Stress makes it worse. You know, quiet rooms make it worse. Going to really, really loud places can make it worse later. But I also know a lot of really creative, incredible people who have it. And it's like been cool to have this like network of people to talk to because it's such a unique experience. A lot of people have it.
Musicians, I know. But, tons of musicians have it.
Yes. And I think also having a dad, my dad has, you know, two hearing devices and has for a long time. And you know, it's just something I know about. And so I've had to just kind of, you know, you don't get it all the time. And I have a very, very, very blessed life. And that's, you know, it's just one of the things that I have to deal with. And I have to find a way to make it okay. And it is like this weird thing that I have that just kind of on a macro level, I apply to everything else in my life.
Do you have trouble hearing as well?
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And that same ear.
So it's only one, it's only one ear.
One ear.
If you close that ear, does that help?
There's like, no, because it's inside. I'm trying it as we speak, but it's inside my head.
Yeah.
So no, it doesn't help. When I take my finger out, it helps because it's like, feels like this kind of new, fresh sound. Things that help are like, I listen to, you know, sounds like oceans and waves breaking and rain. Fake rain sounds and, you know, white noise and things like that can help mask it. But, and I have like this whole crazy device I go to sleep with. That's like an eye mask that has like built-in speakers so that, cause it's really hard for me to fall asleep without like any sound.
Uh-huh.
So
have you ever listened to ASMR?
Oh, I like ASMR, but it's a whole different thing because everybody's tinnitus has its own frequency. So the things that sound good are the things that like can cover or like match that frequency, you know?
Fascinating.
It's fascinating. It's a whole thing.
I'm sure it's very difficult to live with. I feel for you.
Thank you. Thanks. It is. And it's, you know, it's not easy, but I'm also like in the grand scheme, like, first of all, what's easy? And I mean, there's so many other things that are more difficult. And that's another thing. It just reminds me of all the time. It's like, it gives me built-in empathy. It's like that thing. It's like, you know, that saying, I think it's an AA saying that's like, you can't compare your insides to somebody else's outside. Mm-hmm. This is, here we go. Like nobody knows about this except for me. It's my own like personal torture. And so I can't ever look at somebody and think I know what's happening in their lives or, you know, in their head.
I always think that's a remarkable thing that you just said, that you can be walking around and no one can tell what kind of inner turmoil you have at that moment. Mm. And you could be, you have just lost someone you loved or have your situation and you look normal. You look like everything's fine. I mean, you look better than normal. But I think there's a way in which it's shocking how much we assume about other people.
Yeah. And even when you look at old pictures of yourself, I'm sure you do this too, where you're like, God, I know, I remember exactly the feeling I had. And even though I look young and like I'm having fun and I'm with all these great people, I was dying inside or I had just suffered the worst heartbreak or loss or whatever I've ever had in that picture. So it's just a constant reminder that you just don't know. And you kind of have to, I love this phrase. Have you ever seen that Bill Withers documentary? He's such a hero to me on so many levels, but he was a really bad stutterer.
Huh.
And talking to a group of kids who stutter. And he says to them, you have to show up with other people with prepared forgiveness. Because you have to know that their reaction to you is the best that they can do in that moment. And I think that's, for him to say that as somebody who suffered a speech impediment, you know, to have that level of empathy for people responding to him is just a reminder that everybody is going through something and everybody's doing their best. We hope we have to at least show up feeling that everybody's doing their best.
I love that. That's a very beautiful answer. All right, and the final question, and I'm sad to leave you, is something that happened in your life that's purely joyous.
Right. Besides my child, because he's just pure joy to me, my favorite thing in the world is dancing.
Oh, there's wow.
I love dancing so much. I wouldn't say I'm not a pro. I'm not going on the road. I'm not going and dancing with the stars, but
I think you should. Dancing with the Stars is like literally my favorite thing to watch.
Thank you. This is me announcing my, I'll be on the next season. No, I'm just
you
kidding.
Have to depend. You have to demand. I can tell you which pro to demand.
Okay. When I get there,
I have to bring back Derek Hough for this. That's all I have to say.
What an incredible dancer.
What an incredible dancer. And a great teacher. Great teacher.
I saw him dance at some event. I was very close to him. I was like standing like a foot away and I couldn't understand his hips. I couldn't understand his center of gravity. Like it made no sense to me. He's really good.
He's also, I've watched the show religiously. I'm not trying to interrupt, but I have to say this because it's very important to me. I've watched the show religiously and he's an excellent teacher. I mean, people get so much better while they dance with him. I mean, he kind of is tough, but he gets amazing results. And I have to say, I think you two would really get along. So that's my recommendation.
Well, I'm going to track him down.
Did you start dancing when you were young?
I've loved dancing, since I was young. I mean, I took ballet. I wasn't particularly good at it. I've taken like some form of hip hop classes since I was 12, you know, and that hip hop for me is, it's just really, truly the most joyous thing in the world. To dance. And in non-COVID times, I have a pajama jammy jam birthday party every year. That's just me and my friends. Like I've set very, very, very strict parameters. There's no talking. There's no drama. There's no sitting on the sidelines. You're on the dance floor for 6 hours or you're hydrating and you're getting a snack. That's it.
I want an invite.
Next time we're at parties again, you got it. It's true joy. And there's nothing to report afterwards. Like there's no post-gaming about what happened and who talked to who because nobody's talking to each other. We're just dancing and sweating and like just kind of like coexisting in the same place, not even really looking at each other. Sometimes like hugging, doing dances together, coordinated dances, but that's my happy place.
And do you do the soundtrack?
I have an incredible DJ. We talk, we collaborate, but Tendaji, he's my friend and he's DJed the party since, you know, for the last decade and a half. But he's like, he's in my mind. Like we're musical soulmates. Like he knows what's up.
And when you hear music, does it affect your hearing? Does that impact on the tinnitus?
Well, yeah, I don't hear it. If I'm in a dance floor, I don't hear anything but the music. And that's probably where part of the joy is that I don't have to think about it.
Have you always done this for your birthday or is this a fairly recent development?
I've done it kind of on and off for the past like decade, but it came out of the fact that like anytime when my sister and I would talk about why we liked to party and the reason we liked the party is because we got to dance. That's it. Like it wasn't about anything else. So why not just cut to the chase and do the thing we like?
I can't remember, but I think you dance with Bill in On the Rocks, don't you? Isn't there a dance?
No, he makes me whistle.
Yes.
Yeah. We've danced together, but no, not on screen.
I've done a conga line with him, but I wouldn't.
He's a good dancer. He's a fun person to dance with.
Yeah, and he's good at a conga line.
Yeah.
He got the entire Total Strangers to do a conga line at a event for the Golden Globes.
That's a specialty.
Yeah, it was quite something. and your party is men and women, or is it just...
Yes. It's really, we just have to have the shared values of, is dance an important part of your life and your evening? And then you're there. It doesn't matter how old or how young, you just got to want to do that. You got to want to dance.
And the guys are willing to dance that way. I love that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have. Yes. Yes. And especially because the music, I think I'm a 90s R&B fanatic, and I'm also a music fanatic, obviously, but 90s R&B and then this and kind of like post disco, what they call in England boogie, but I don't even know if there's a name for it here, but it's sort of like early 80s post disco. It still has a little disco flavor, but there's like people are getting a little bit more into like pop at that time. Those two genres of music, I just don't ever tap out. Like it is every single song, the deeper you go, the happier I am. Like I can't get enough.
Can you sing?
I sing fine. I sang with Bill actually in the Christmas special.
Oh, right. The Christmas special. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Good question. I mean, it's tough because karaoke is a fine art. And the songs that you like aren't necessarily the songs that you're good at, and they're not like the right key for you.
You also have to read the room. I think you have to read the room.
Got to read the room. Got to know what they like. Like, is it time? Is it like a pump up moment? Like, you got to get everybody on their feet. I also like, I'm not the kind of person who's dying to draw attention to me with a ballad. Like, that's just not my style. Like, maybe alone. So I would probably go for like a party song, like something with a rap in the middle, you know, like I once did in Tokyo. I did Big Papa by Notorious B.I.G. and I sang the part and then I rapped the verse, which is very hard, but it went over very well.
That's a tough one.
It's tough. Oh, no, wait. I did Juicy. It was Juicy. I did Juicy.
Still impressive.
Yeah.
So you're not coming out there with a Beyonce ballad.
No, nobody wants to hear that from me. We want to hear that from Beyonce. No.
All right. Well, you've been utterly delightful. And I thank you so much for speaking with us.
It was so fun. Thank you, Lynn. I wish I was like, I could pet your dog and walk in the rain.
I wish you could too. And I wish we could do this in person. And I look forward to going to your dance party.
You're in. Next time it happens, you're in.
And pajamas, I look forward most of all to see you on Dancing with the Stars. I promise to attend when you're there. I don't care about COVID. I'm going to watch you win with Derek Huff, win the Mirror Ball Trophy.
Listen, you're manifesting it. Let's see what happens, you know?
All right. Well, have a wonderful day and thank you so much.
Thank you, Lynn. Take care. It was so fun. Great to talk to you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Five Things with Lynn Hirschberg. The podcast is produced by Michael Beckert. The audio engineers are Rich Cerbini and Max Solomon at Hanger Studios. The music is by Robin Shore. And thanks to Sarah Moonves for making everything at W possible. Most of all, thank you to Zora.